Thank you, Lorraine. Friedrich, thank you for inviting me. It's always a great pleasure. Well, it's always a great pleasure to return to, well, the number one university in the world, is it not? Last night, Ben was kind enough to invite me to speak to the MST group, and I'm delighted to see so many of you here again today. Even though I know your hearts are sinking and you're thinking, not that DS bloke again. But yesterday, we're talking about something which I think is very important in this discourse, was we were touching upon race and the criminal justice system. And in a sense, I just want to make three very brief points, because almost 50%, as we've seen, of people involved in these events were from BME backgrounds. And in that context, I want to make a sharp distinction. But this is my argument. My argument is this. These were not race riots, but race was meaningfully and importantly engaged by them. So let me turn to my first point. Firstly, I want to deal with the question of moral alibi, or more precisely, the two faces, the two facets of the moral alibi argument. Last night, one of our students very perceptively challenged me and mentioned those other riots in Tottenham, the riots that happened in 1985 at Broadwater Farm, where, as many of you will know, PC Keith Blakelock was stabbed 43 times and killed. And this colleague of ours mentioned it because he made the important point that whole sections of that black community in North London closed ranks. They didn't cooperate with the police. They wouldn't pass on information about who was involved in the offence. Ladies and gentlemen, it seems to me this is a matter of foremost importance for all of us. And it's a question we cannot duck. And it's a question, in many ways, that arises in a transformed way with these riots. Overall, my stance on this matter is pretty uncomplicated. It's pretty old-fashioned. And my stance is murder is murder, whether it's of a policeman or anyone else. And although there is not a legal obligation, there's not an obligation in law, save in terrorism cases, for members of the public with information about a crime to report it, I profoundly believe there is a moral obligation to pass on information where so serious an offence has taken place. But, and you're going to be thinking, there's always a but with these infernal lawyers, aren't you? But when we begin to critically evaluate why sections of the black community in Tottenham in 1985 were so suspicious of the police and refused to cooperate and were reluctant to do so, we learn invaluable lessons that are relevant to the riots last summer. Because what was the event that immediately factually preceded the Broadwater Farm riots? It was the death of a black woman, Cynthia Jarrett, whilst her house was being searched by the police. And the resonances between what happened in Tottenham in 85 and, as we will see with Teddy's film shortly, what happened last year with the shooting of Mark Duggan, and as we mentioned to the MST group, also what happened with that young woman. And we'll see that, I think. There's some footage, Teddy, isn't there? Yeah. We'll see. That is not reported. Many people, I didn't know about it until I saw Teddy's film. And there are all these hidden narratives. There are all these subterranean pressures that go to form what actually did happen. Let me deal with another point, because when I was a young barrister, the first big appeal I did, the first big case really I did, was representing one of the young men, one of the young black men, who was convicted of PC Blakelock's murder. Now, that young black man had very, very severe learning difficulties. He was interviewed for days without proper legal representation and appropriate adults by the police. He was physically maltreated by them. This was in the middle 80s. We didn't have the forensic science we did now, but eventually, a number of years later, as the science developed, ESDA tests, that is, document testing analysis proved that the so-called confession that this Black Lad made was tampered with and almost certainly false. He spent 4 years in prison, someone who was almost certainly innocent. And the reason I mention it is because it is those kinds of behaviours by parts of the state that foster the deep suspicions within minority ethnic communities. When we look at the summer riots, as we're going to see with Teddy's film, and we hear from some of the voices from people at grassroots level, we will hear and see reverberations and resonances of those events in Tottenham in the mid-80s echoing to us across time and space. And so when we turn to the pronouncements of the Court of Appeal in its guideline decision, the Blackshaw case that Lorraine has touched upon, and what the Court of Appeal said, we're bound to agree, are we not, all of us in this room, that social frustrations can never be an excuse for committing crimes, for looting. They don't justify them, they do not exonerate them. In short, they do not provide a moral alibi for criminality. But on the other hand, do not social scientists need to be attentive to the web of underlying social forces that are at play here? Should we remain blind to these deeper social issues, the profound social pressures, alienation, experience of overt and institutional racism, concern about police behaviour, and yes, Nikki, the overuse in particular of stop and search powers? We'll see that in the film as well, I suspect. Entrenched poverty in these marginalised areas, as Loic Vacant would say, defamed areas, stripped of social capital, where people have evaporating job prospects. These are the real social contexts of what happened, I argue. So we should be vigilant. I want to suggest, ladies and gentlemen, that we do not use the disorder as a moral alibi in another sense, the second sense of it. That we do not use it as a moral alibi for failing collectively to deal with those deeper social issues. Which brings me to my second point, and why I think events like today at Cambridge are so vitally important. The saying that history is written by the victors has been attributed variously to Napoleon Bonaparte, William Churchill, and even good old Joe Stalin. No matter who said it, whether it was Stalin or Churchill or Bonaparte, no matter who said it, engaged as we all are right now in the task, the urgent, vital task, of writing the history of these riots, it seems to me that we are all in danger of not being victors, but losers. Why do I say that? I'm concerned that we all may become losers because if we focus exclusively on issues, important issues that Ben raised about thwarted consumerism, but if we focus upon acts of agency, upon the individual criminal offender, if we adopt an almost exclusively micro level of analysis, we are missing the big picture. What for me is the important picture? Undoubtedly, the discourse, and you've all heard it, undoubtedly the discourse that has emerged over the last year, or 9 months, is a heavily contested one. But it seems to me that the dominant discourse, the one that's predominated in the media and in political circles, which seeks exclusively to responsibilise both modern British youth, in inverted commas, but also, and maybe not directly, but implicitly, certain marginalised communities. That is something that is pernicious and is socially divisive, and it should be challenged whenever we encounter it. And it should be challenged for three reasons. Firstly, for its lack of explanatory power. Secondly, because it is a simplistic analysis. And thirdly, for its sheer reductionism. So can I just turn very briefly and finally to my third point? It seems to me that the summer riots inhabit a very strange sociological space. Undoubtedly, they are rare. They are highly contingent events. And yet, paradoxically, and at precisely the same time, they are also intimately connected to us all. They are not entirely detached and isolated. And the causal drivers, the social forces, those invisible connective tissues, they are the ones that tie us all together, as we were talking last night, into the same social fabric. And ladies and gentlemen, it seems to me that one of the chief lessons we should learn from last summer's riot is precisely that. That this is not someone else's problem. This is not a problem about some alien, detached, marginalised community, but quite the reverse. In fact, we are all in it together. Thank you very much.
So we will now have a very brief, or not a full film. It is a premiere, so you are very lucky. I don't know what we will see, but I think we will see something great because it was highly recommended by Dexter. But we will not show the whole film because we assume some of you may want to ask a few questions afterwards and comment. So having 5-6 speakers, of course, is a little longer than the normal Thursday afternoon speeches. I think 15 minutes or so, and then we have a brief question, comments. You may present your own theory, and then we have more drinks than normal outside. So some incentives are coming up.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure for me to introduce Teddy Nye, who you see sitting next to Friedrich. Teddy is a film director with 7 years' experience of filmmaking. He's also a member of the Fully Focused Community, and this is, it seems to me, a tremendously important organisation that works in the community, particularly, I think, Teddy, with young people. Is that right?
Yeah.
And they run projects for young people, by young people. In the recent past, they've run projects for young mothers, with a pupil referral unit, and with Women's Aid, which is an organisation that helps young women who have suffered from domestic violence. Part of their mission is to constantly train young people. The participants are invariably from inner city areas, from marginalised areas. These people are, in the horrible government parlance, not in education, employment or training. Yet after they've worked with Teddy's organisation, 95% of them are either in full-time employment or in education. So Teddy is going to understand play about 15-20 minutes of the film, but then in true Hollywood fashion, he will stop the film at a breathtaking, heart-stopping, nerve-jangling moment and leave you all with a cliffhanger, with the moral dilemma of whether to go for that drink or to see what happens. So, ladies and gentlemen, Teddy Nye.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Very nice to be here. Thank you, Dexter, for that lovely intro. I just wanted to say a couple of things briefly before I play the film. We are a youth media organisation, and we do specifically work with young people who, as Dexter said, are not in education, employment or training, or are going through the youth justice system. So young people that come from youth offending teams, youth offending service, or young people that have been to prison or who are at risk of or have been expelled from school. So we have a steering group of 14 passionate young people from across London. And when the riots kicked off, we had an emergency meeting. We're a media organisation with youth, so it made sense. Our young people were very frustrated with the media's misconception, the misinformation, and also the fact that they were completely neglecting the voices of young people. So this, combined with the confusion and further misinformation around the killing of Mark Duggan, by the police, and the unacceptable treatment of Mark's family was a driving force, and it really fueled the young people with us. And we're just a small team of four adults that work with the young people. And we went out on the streets and we began to make the film. Now, we really thought that because it was said that the killing of Mark Duggan was the trigger, that it was important to investigate who Mark Duggan was, and also if his death did spark the riots, then why? So the 20 minutes that you're going to see of the film actually deals specifically with this, and you'll get to meet some of the young people during the film. The remaining 40 minutes, which I think there might be an opportunity to see if people want to stay behind, but otherwise, if you're interested in the film, please come up and speak to me and we can swap cards. The remaining 40 minutes deals with, there's a lot of synergy with things that Ben talked about, with things that Bauman talked about as well, with consumerism, things like, when you're young at school, if you haven't got the right pair of trainers, people might not speak to you. The bombardment of advertising and consumerism, but also the police stop and search, the relationships between police and communities, the lack of moral leadership within the government, the consumerist society that we live in, but also, very importantly, it shines a spotlight on the many achievements of so many of our young people in our society. So, this will be the 20 minutes, the 40 you may have to wait to see. Hopefully you won't have to wait too long.
I've got a text from Mark, like he said that, like at 4 to 6. By the time I looked at it, he sent another one at 6 o'clock. Saying that he's got to stop by Trident and look out for a green VW banner. But about 10 minutes later, we were all out here. A phone call came through. His brother just said, somebody dropped me down to Tottenham Hill. So my brother's been shot.
I heard gunshots that just echoed out. They were frighteningly loud. They just were frighteningly loud, that's what I can really say. And then the burly men screaming, and I thought, that is serious, that's police. Well, through the railings, I could actually see the police working on him, administering what I guess they would call CPR. So I saw the air ambulance land behind the bus, and I actually saw the paramedics, like they rushed out, they ran towards where Mark was laying down in the street. I remember seeing him leave, and it was just like, what I found amazing was the difference between this, you know, how they rushed towards the scene and how they walked back slowly with their heads down. I knew that whoever was on the floor was dead. Thank you.
On the 4th of August 2011 in Tottenham, North London, a minicab was stopped by officers from Operation Trident. What happened next remains unclear. However, two shots were fired by the CO19 officers. Shortly after this, 28-year-old male Mark Duggan was pronounced dead by paramedics at the scene. In the days that followed, a chain of events occurred that involved a peaceful protest being overshadowed by violent clashes with the police.
I'm 61 years old. I have been to demonstrations and engaged in issues with police officers since the age of 14. And in all that time, I've never seen the police behave or respond in the way they did.
The disorder spiraled out of control and ultimately led to the devastation of Tottenham Harrow. This was the start of 4 days of rioting, mass looting, burning and destruction which spread right across London and other major cities in England. Becoming the largest case of mass civil unrest in modern British history. 14 passionate young people from across London came together to discuss what immediate positive action they could take. The 14 young people, which include myself, make up the steering group of a non-profit organisation called Fully Focused Community. During the emergency meeting, it became abundantly clear that the group felt a unanimous sense of frustration. It was agreed that the most constructive course of action we could take would be to go out in the community with our production team. Our aim was to engage in a deeper conversation about what was unfolding around us. We decided the best place to start our mission would be in Tottenham and headed to where Mark Duggan grew up.
Well, I know Mark because of this estate, it's called Broadwater Farm, and because we're such family-orientated people, feel like a community, you know what I mean? We're just known as one, so we all get to know each other. Growing up, born little boys, we play marbles, play pogs. You remember pogs? I describe Mark as a good family man, because even when it comes to his kids, he's always there 100%. 100%.
He loved Simone, always has, always will. His children, he just adored him. He lived for them. He was a real family man.
Good father, good friend, right? Laugh anybody on the state, old and young, no one's really got a bad thing to say about him.
Before Mark died, he got into the arts in a sense, rapping, writing poetry. And I think that's Mark. He found himself, although it was a bit too late because he was taken away from us. What?
He had a way of lighting up a room when he went into the room with his bow to show him there. He would light up a room, he was full of joy.
He had time for everybody.
I remember hearing the news about Mark on the Thursday, and I went down to Broadwater Farm on the Friday, and there was a huge amount of frustration from all sorts of people, from all walks of life, whether they were young or old, black or white. People were upset that Mark had died.
Nothing happened. Nothing happened for a couple of days until we decided we needed to go to the police station. But the fact of the matter is that the police didn't see fit to come and to make Mark Duggan's appearance aware that he'd been killed out on the streets there. They heard everything through the media.
You murdered him, and what? Did you think he had no family to come and tell? Did you think he was a nobody?
Rather than letting us unfold what's happening on the TV, the decent thing we took to done, whether it was the responsibility of the IPCC or the Metropolitan Police Force, was to come.
That's exactly what happened.
You had a right to know what has happened in circumstances where often the families weren't present. So they don't know, but they want to know desperately how it is that somebody has died. So it seems to me those are the absolute pinnacle of circumstances in which they should be properly represented, funded by the state, in order to make these inquiries.
At around 5 p.m. on Saturday the 6th of August, Mark Duggan's family, supported by the community, began a peaceful march which left Broadwater Farm and headed to Tottenham Police Station. The family were hoping to get some answers.
There's about 30 of us initially. We've gone down there. We just asked, like, when we've got there, it's like they're expecting us coming, because as we was leaving the farm, the cameras were on to us. Like, they were all watching us. You could see them moving, like, watching us, yeah? Shutters on the front, the actual front of the way you walk in just to go for general inquiries, that was halfway down with three policemen standing there. Right, and we've got there now, they said, can we help you? So basically we told them, yeah, like, they saw the vans and everything there, we want answers for Mark Dunning. Is there anybody here that can answer our questions or can help us?
People just wanted you to speak to the police in Tottenham Police Station and ask what happened to Mark, and nobody was acknowledging the fact that all these people were standing outside the police station. It was just cold down there, like, people were just sad, like, people were angry as well at the same time, but it wasn't an anger, like a violent anger, it was a hurt anger, do you know what I mean? Like, it was a cry.
There appears to me to have been deliberate confusion and buck passing as to who was responsible for informing the family after he died, and nobody seems to be giving proper answers as to why it was that they were treated in such an appalling way.
It was just a simple little thing. They knew he was coming. If they had somebody down there in the first place to speak to us, we would have been gone within half an hour. There would have been none of this build-up of people down there, but we really want to know, like, who's going to be accountable for this.
Yes, the family went down to the police station to get some answers and to seek redress, and their wishes should have been granted. They should have been seen, they should have been treated with dignity, and they weren't.
The family's treatment by the Met Police and the IPCC, frankly, is quite disgraceful, and I think that it follows a pattern of other cases where misleading information is put into the public domain, misinformation attempts to smear the character of the person who's died to somehow excuse away the actions of the police. It's a process that we see time and time again in these kind of cases.
There's a really emotional, highly charged evening, because this misnomer, this false information that they put out, they've been involved in a shootout, and everybody who knew him, or knew of him, or knew his family, actually knew that that would be totally incorrect, and that just really heightened tensions and heightened emotions and certainly solidified the belief that he'd been executed.
On top of the lack of communication and response by the police, the media initially reported the incident as a shootout. It was later confirmed by ballistic reports that a bullet found lodged in the police officer's radio was consistent with being fired from a police-issued Heckler & Koch MP5 submachine gun. Reports confirmed a gun was found at a scene inside a sock. Ballistic reports also found that a gun had not been fired. Later, additional newspaper reports went on to say there was no evidence Mark Duggan had been carrying the gun when shot by police.
What I've seen from the media's perspective, a lot of it is, if they can't get the truth, they make it up.
Yeah. He was not a gangster. I do not like that word. They're portraying him to be a devil. He's not a devil.
Like all these pictures they're putting up with his son in the fucking paper, all of that, that's hurting for the family. That's only hurt for the family.
Now they're bringing out stories that, like infidelity and all this, what's that got to do with anything? Like, why, what they want to do is destroy his character, isn't it? It's called character assassination.
You know, we don't know who to trust, who to speak to. We're kept dignified, and it's painful to see what the media has written.
This is something that they do to our community all the time. They've, every time that a black person is killed in a racist incident or linked to police, they always try to undermine them. And they've managed to do it with lots of them. Because if you grow up in an estate like this, I'm sorry, you're not going to grow up to be an angel.
He didn't choose to be born in what was born. He didn't choose to grow up on that rough estate. But he made the most of his life. He was almost 30 before he died. And he got to 30 without having a criminal record. So ask anybody, even people that don't really know him, that know of him, they will only tell you positive things about Mark. So that says something about somebody growing up in a rough community and being respected and liked.
He was known as a peacemaker.
Yeah, he was.
I remember saying, oh, something's going to kick off. And when it happened, I thought, wow, that shows you how frustrated and how angry people were. And it wasn't just about Mark either. I suppose it was about all the other people that have died in police custody. It was too raw, too soon for another Broadwater Farm resident to have died at the hands of the police.
The spark that lit the fuse was the beating of the young girl.
I just see loads of people running. And like, I come back and there's people showing videos of police beating up one girl on the floor.
Start here. When did they start here, though? What happened?
Other people just got involved. That's when it all got violent.
The police's absolute and total lack of response was shocking. It amazed everybody. I've never seen that before. And the longer that they failed to respond, the bolder the kids became. And then eventually, it just kicked off.
The atmosphere was literally hot. There was so much body heat. There was two fires. Everything was so, it looked like a movie.
I kind of had to see for myself what I was reading about on Twitter and friends were texting me about. And what I saw was pretty extraordinary.
Over the next 3 days, the rioting, looting and burning continued to spread throughout North, South, East and West London.
I've seen a lot of younger guys and myself kind of down there, and they just kind of wanted to get out of like war with the police, basically.
I was just standing on the side of the road, told to move by the police officer. I moved, and pushed me, and let his dog bite me. Just let the dog bite me for no reason.
We got a call out to a house fire. We noticed that obviously it wasn't an house fire, it was at a soap building. And the flames was like immense. We parked outside the soap place and it was so hot, we had to park the fires in around the corner.
As soon as it started going into riots, that was it, the atmosphere changed. Everyone was just going crazy. No one was listening to the police. But at the same time, the police weren't listening to us.
People like me were focusing more towards the police, and I saw a lot of aggression towards the police. Like, at a particular time, I didn't see a lot of young people trying to loot or steal anything at that time. I just saw a lot of anger vented towards the police, which I was surprised about.
They're talking about youth and black youth and that being on the streets, but I'm telling you now, there are big people there, more cultural people, taking stuff from the buildings there and setting up barricades for the police.
Camden was just, funny feeling to it, like everywhere had a funny feeling. All the kids on my estate were just riding around with their hoods up and was a bit angry, and like, walking past people's houses, I could just hear that Camden's gonna kick off, it's gonna kick off in Camden.
I actually saw fire from far away,
And I was like, oh gosh, that looks like it's near my house or my house. And I kept on walking, like kind of worried. And when I get, and I actually got down there really close, I saw the fire and I saw some people crying.
I walked into the crowd and all I see is a man coming out with laptops in his arm. Thinking, oh, what's this? And I walked into the crowd, the guy's just pushing me around and I was like, oh, I'm in a riot.
Come down to see my high street was in tatters, you know? Like, man's been really worrying and robbing for nothing. Like, that's it, robbing for nothing.
I see a couple of things happening still. Like, happening in a Tesco.
Running around,
bellied up,
hooded,
some big.
22 London boroughs in total were affected. On Monday the 8th of August, while the unrest continued in London, blew in and clashes with the police erupted in Birmingham and Wolverhampton.
It was bad, but it was wild, like a film, you get me, car. Like, it was madness in London, and then when it come down here, obviously, I don't live too far from here. You've got your local shop, your local petrol station on the news talking about madness has gone on. So
The tension was like, it was awful. I was really, really scared because the guys were holding like anything they were holding, weapons they were holding, sticks they were holding, just anything they could get their hands on they were holding onto.
There were further reports of fires, looting and clashes with the police in Liverpool, Manchester city centre and Salford.
And we had like my building was going around with people just shot like wondering what it's about and that it. But we used to come down here because we were so people were like moving around here and like the atmosphere was just, you could feel the tension and the friction that people like could tell that something was going on.
If
he didn't get shot dead, then I don't think all them riots would have happened.
People screaming, buildings are blast. What the fuck? How the hell this all start? Because police murdered our brother Mark. This was the spark which ignited the flame that spread pandemonium around the UK. Communities destroyed, homes burnt to the ground, shops cleared out and looted by everyone around. Violence is spreading, war against the police, who despite their authority are seemingly weak. Control is gone, it's well out of hand. Things are so desperate in this lawless land. Vigilantes are out now and in full force. BNP armed with bats and Sikhs with holstered swords. People are living in fear now. The atmosphere is tense. The conflict of everyone's feelings is incredibly immense. I'm longing for this to be over, for normality to be restored, so my children can carry on living and play happily outdoors.
Thank you very much for this very interesting film. We have a few minutes time. Could we put on the lights, please, again? Of course, it's now a little difficult, this more visual and emotional aspect of the event, and previously the more rational and more scientific approaches, but I'm sure you have no problems to connect these aspects. And who wants to ask a question or comment on what we have done on this experiment today?